Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally episode 7, season 10. Three more to go. Are you excited? I am, I'll be honest with you. I need a break. It has to be said. But WRC drivers now on their break. They had their final round of WRC last weekend. There's still plenty of events going on. Of course, we've got Rally Barbados coming up this weekend and various other bits and pieces, which we'll probably get to a bit further into the podcast. I think Ryan Champion's up to something. Not entirely sure what it is, but I think it's a little rally, little single venue somewhere. I'm being very, very facetious, obviously. Ryan Champion will be joining us a little bit later on the podcast. I'll be honest with you, I'm going to remove the smoke and mirrors now. The bit we did with Ryan, we did 2 days ago, because we're about a day behind where we should have been. My fault, completely. And so we kind of spoke about it as if you would have been listening to this yesterday, as opposed to today, which is Friday. So there you go. Apologies. So at the top of the programme, it's just me and thee. It's just me and Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I feel like I've had lots of coffee, but I don't think I have. In fact, I've had no coffee at all. I think it's just sleep deprivation is starting to kick in. So if I'm speaking too quickly, I apologise to everybody. Jack Bennion, you're of course on a 3-day sabbatical. Is that due to the fact that all rallying has now gone quiet and racing, dare I say, has gone quiet at MN? Is it a quiet period? Are you having a bit of time off?
No, quite the opposite for me, because as always, whenever you choose to take some time off as a journalist, something big like a fatal accident inquiry result kicks off and means that you don't get much time off. So, yeah.
I was going to talk to you about this. I started reading the report. It is quite a comprehensive report. I suppose it's out there for people to find. We weren't going to start with this, but as we're here, I think we should cover it. Have you read the full report, Jack?
Yeah, I have all 112 pages, whatever it is. I managed to get through it all in the end, so yeah, that was a bit of a slog, I've got to say.
To be fair, I think I didn't think it was going to be so long. I started reading it on my phone, got about 30 pages in, and then noticed in the top that it was like page 30 of 130, and I thought, this is ridiculous. So I didn't go much further than reading the first part, and I've seen certain elements of it being quoted and people commenting on it and stuff like that on social media. What have you taken from the report, Jack?
I think the main thing I've taken from it is how fantastic the sheriff has been in his investigation, because the worry with things like this always is, you know, people like us who understand how rallies work, or in my case, like to think they know how rallies work. It's difficult because the mainstream media will always pick up on the dramatic and over the top bits, which they have done in this case. And the people who understand how rallying works want to know what it all means. So the sheriff, in reading the whole report, clearly has got really involved in how a rally's run. He's clearly got a very deep understanding of which sort of people in the rally have which roles. And he's also paid a lot of attention to the motorsport event safety review, which was carried out in 2015 in Scotland as well. And kind of understands all the implications that have brought everything together to where we're at now. So his report's very extensive. And what I've taken from it is that, he's gone into great depth of the two incidents that happened, the 2013 Snowman Rally and the 2014 Jim Clark Rally. And I think there's still, I'd still like to be reading it once or twice more just to pick up a few more things. But he's gone into great depth and great detail and come to some pretty honest conclusions. But ones, I think, it could have been a lot worse for rallying in the sense of what we've actually seen.
Do we understand what the ramifications could be now this report has been published?
I think, there's a lot of recommendations that the sheriff has set out that he'd like to see happen. So I think the only thing we've got to go on this is the motorsport event safety review, which I mentioned before, which, if you're not too familiar with that, was something that was carried out in the Scottish government to try and kind of make rallying safer. And they came up with a 27 recommendation document, which the MSA implemented straight away. So I think the MSA will take a look at this now and look at the recommendations that the sheriff has made. And, I think it's within the MSA's interest to kind of make a lot of these recommendations, to implement them now. So I think we'll see a lot of things that the sheriff has mentioned being implemented fairly shortly. Some of them will take a bit more time. But, the issue for me in all this, Tony, is, not that we're making rallying safer, because obviously that's fantastic. But the problem that is always going to happen with this kind of thing is, it's volunteers who are organising our sport. You know, it's volunteers who are putting the rally putting rallies together and spending a lot of their time sort of after work and in the evenings filling out paperwork. And the more organisation we give to them and the more responsibility we give to them, you know, the less fun it's going to be to organise a rally. And at the end of the day, that's what it should be for volunteers. It should be fun. That's the whole point, that people get involved in the sport. So I think moving forward, the ramifications are that there's recommendations being set out by the sheriff, all of which are sort of listed in the Fatal Accident Inquiry. You can go and have a look at online. And I think, you know, I can't speak for the Motorsport Association, but I'm fairly sure they'll implement a lot of them. But the other thing is, I think as a sport moving forward, and you know, the MSA will probably have a big part to play in this, is we need to support organisers and really help them to carry on doing their job.
I guess what brought it home to me as well at the weekend, you know, we speak about this, we do get a little bit UK-centric, and we know we have listeners all over the world, but one thing that highlighted everything to me at the weekend was some of the images we've seen from Rally Australia, which was just frightening.
It's difficult, isn't it? The key thing is always education, isn't it? You know, educating rally spectators to understand the dangers they're putting themselves in. You know, it's easier, you know, a circuit or something like that where you can put people behind barriers and things like that. It's not so easy when you're out in the middle of nowhere, hundreds of miles from civilization, and you know, there's not really anyone to protect the people who are there. So it's always going to be something that rallying is going to fight against. And you know, these problems existed in the 1950s and 60s when rallying was around then, and they exist now. And the real fight that rallying has is to keep educating people, because what we have now and what we probably didn't have in the 50s and 60s is quite, you know, strict health and safety rules that maybe weren't so sort of stringent back then. But now, you know, you can't afford to, you know, you never want people dying in a sport, do you? Especially spectators who've, you know, come with their families to kind of watch something that's supposed to be fun. So, you know, it's all about education and making people stand in the safe places. And that's what a lot of the document is about, actually.
Yeah, as I say, if you can see it, search it out. I think it's interesting reading, not just for if you're based in the UK, but all over the world. I think it does have sections in it, which I think, you know, I think common sense from the sections that I kind of read, Jack, I don't know about you, but there's a lot of common sense there which could be applied, you know, not just in the UK but across the world.
Absolutely. You know, you made the perfect example of Australia. You know, we saw that bloke sort of clinging to the side of that rock where, you know, Chris Meek's thrown it into a quick right-hander. I think probably everyone's seen them pictures. If not, go and search them out on social media. But yeah, you know, the rules that are set out in the Fatal Accident Inquiry, and what I've mentioned at the start with it, you know, the sheriff being so involved and really getting to grips with the sport and really understanding what it's all about. You know, that there is a lot of things in there that rally organisers around the world can take into account for sure.
Absolutely. Now, we've just been talking about Rally Australia. Of course, it was the final round of WRC. Is it fair to say, and is this doing a disservice to the guys there, that it was pretty much everybody had clocked off?
I don't know if everyone had clocked off, but I think there's definitely much less interest paid. Mainly, you know, it's an odd round to have as the last round of the World Championship, isn't it? Because, you know, the majority, you'd have to say the majority of the people who are interested in rallying are sort of European-based or in a sort of European time zone, you'd say, and most of the rallies are run at that, you know, that kind of, well, run to those time zones. And Australia was so sort of out of sync, wasn't it? And with the titles already decided, the manufacturers and the drivers' championship, it didn't really leave a lot to play for. But what we did see was a, you know, real dominant rally from Hyundai, and it's worth paying attention to, because the pace they showed could really sort of be significant in next year. And maybe the, you know, we're seeing now that they've got their act together and their driver lineups performing well, because Mickelson and Nerville really dominated the rally.
Absolutely, absolutely. Folk, we're going to come back. We're going to have a little break, and we're going to come back because we're going to have Trevor Agnew joining us as well, who's going to dissect a few bits and pieces from Rally Australia.
This is Absolute Rally, Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And of course, now, you know, we started off at the top. It was just me and Jack. I said we were going to bring somebody else in. And that somebody else was some bloke who used to do a bit of co-driving, does a bit of stage end, does a bit of driver coaching, does a bit of minecart. He does all kinds of things. Trevor Agnew, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
How you doing, boys? You well?
We're all good. We're all good. Jack and I have just been discussing whether that on Rally Australia, whether they possibly clocked off early. I'm pretty certain that many had. Jack's not so sure. Where were you at with it?
In what way?
Well, it's interesting, really. Obviously, we know Seb had issues with regards to running order and things like that. But was it a case of genuinely just drivers just getting to the finish and grinding results out? I guess that's what I was getting to.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I think the most relaxed person is Andreas Mikkelsen, for starters. He seems to have the thing under control until he made a mistake. But it keeps coming back to the same thing, really, isn't it? You know, at the start of the year, I sort of had a quick look, and I even wrote a little blog piece about who's going to challenge Ogier. And it all comes down to consistency. And right the way through the year, that's what tripped everybody up. And Neuville, who won the rally, of course, I suppose early in the year, he was, I think it was after Finland, where again it didn't work out for him. And he said he was going to take a lot more chances towards the end of the year. And that didn't make sense to me because at that point he had 42 stage wins to Ogier's 15. And we've seen this with Ogier since Argentina a year ago, where he just knows how to drive at a pace the way Loeb used to do to win rallies. So I think there's a bit of that. You look at Tanak, he probably could have gone faster, but at the end of the day, he wasn't going to bin that car on the last event for Ford. Again, another couple of driver errors on it. You know, it's just this consistency, Tony. It keeps coming back to the same thing. Consistency plus also cars that aren't quite sorted or a little bit soft and not up for the challenge of a full world championship run.
Jackie, you're a big Thierry Neuville fan. Come the end of the season, I think he felt a little bit hard done to, kind of reading, obviously, you know, more wins, more stage wins, et cetera, but obviously being pipped to the post. Is he the man to beat down in 2018?
I'm not a fan of anyone, Tony.
You're completely impartial. You sound like you've suddenly gone to the other side of the room, by the way.
How's that? Is that any better?
That is better. It sounded like go on.
I was trying to do the absolute rally radio listeners a favour by muting myself.
Right.
But, I'll come back in at this point.
Yeah, if you could, that'd be great. Where are you at with Thierry and with regards to, I suppose, Hyundai, you know, moving forward? You know, I suppose on paper it was a very, very strong finish, a 1 and a 3. Obviously, you know, what happened to Andreas. It was unfortunate, as Trev's just been saying there. He looked very, very confident and very, very, very relaxed. And, you know, it was just one of those things that you can't, well, I suppose you can legislate. You could have had two spares with him, but he opted not to. But, you know, are we on the cusp of something with Hyundai, perhaps?
I think, you know, looking at the performance over the weekend, then you've got to say, yeah, you know, they're looking strong for next year. But I think the big thing Thierry needs to work on is consistency and maybe his concentration a little bit as well, because I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think anyone could really argue that, you know, Thierry and Hyundai have been the best package all year and the fastest package all year. But, well, best is not right. Fastest is right. But he's not managed to put the rallies together that Sebastian Ogier has. And, you know, there's very few occasions where Sebastian Ogier has been, you know, blistering faster than Thierry Neuville this year. It's a lot of Ogier bringing the car home when Thierry Neuville is in his sort of maximum attack moods and, you know, doesn't really want to sort of scale back a little bit and really, you know, drive to the best finish. You know, we saw that in probably Finland was the only example we saw that of Thierry this year, really, where he scaled back a little bit because he knew he didn't quite have the pace to match the Toyotas. But it'll be interesting to see next year because he's going to be pushed a lot harder by Andreas Mikkelsen, I think, than he would have been pushed out by any of his teammates this year. That might just give him a little bit of a boost that he knows he's got someone there to maybe take some points off Ogier if he comes back and, you know, do what Elvin Evans and Oit Tanak have done for Sebastian Ogier this year in scoring big points and taking them away from some of the other guys there as well.
Trev, what's happening in Hyundai as well? Obviously, we've now got the situation where we've got a car share option that's going on now with the third car. Does that help or hinder the team? You know, it's helping honour an agreement that they've got in place with other drivers, obviously, because it was a way of kind of shoehorning Andreas in to have a full season. You know, but what Jack's just been saying there, you know, the consistency that's helped M Sport achieve the manufacturers, and obviously what Sebastian Ogier's done, and obviously Tanak coming in third, is the fact that they've had the three same drivers just rally after rally, stage after stage, just pounding it out, knowing the car, doing the testing and stuff like that. The fact now they're going to split their third car, possibly even run a fourth car, maybe on some European rounds, does that maybe put them at a slight disadvantage in order just to honour some contracts?
Well, there's no doubt about it. They had four contracts which they needed to negotiate out of two of them and rewrite them or whatever it may be. Seems to be the process that's been happening over this last while. They've got two front-run drivers, no doubt about it, but this inconsistency, if they can nail it. Remember Mikkelsen as well this year, leading WRC2 by a country mile in Portugal, and he tipped the car upside down, didn't finish that. So if they can get the car stronger, number one, because it hasn't been strong, even the 16 car wasn't strong, if they nail that and the drivers are more consistent, yeah, definitely in with a shout. The other two, they've got a good opportunity and to come back stronger, you know, and Hayden certainly needs to be able to drive where he can enjoy himself. But it's difficult to do that. It's back to the same thing. We've seen it quite a bit this year. Dropping guys from rallies, and we've seen the unrest in that Citroën team as well, again rearing his head in Australia with that public confrontation between Chris Mick and Yves Matton about him getting pulled on the rally. It's not good when you do that in public. I don't know of any instance where people are being criticised in public and it's created motivation in any way. It just doesn't work like that. You certainly don't see it happen in football or any other sport that I know of. You know, you've got to support these guys. So, I suppose a long way around to answer your question is Sordo should be a lot more focused. He didn't seem to be at one of the car this year. In certain rallies, certainly at the start, he was always quick and shake down, but there's always a balance issue with that car most of the year. And it wasn't Danny. He repeatedly said he was trying, but he just couldn't get the car dialed in. Hayden, as we know, if he can get back to and enjoying himself and sort of quieten his mind a little bit, and he seemed to have found something else in Australia, he can make it go quick again. He's got the pace at the end of the day. He just needs to be able to get on and do it and have the support of the team. I think that was probably something that was missing, just by reading between the lines and what I experienced in GB.
Yeah. Jack, something I was going to come to a little bit later on, which Trev just mentioned there, of course, that, you know, the very, well, whether it was intended to be a public spat or whether, you know, obviously there was a camera crew there. And of course, in this day and age, there's always a camera crew because a camera crew is just basically in your pocket. But, you know, we don't normally see these types of things going on. Now, obviously, there's been the historic ones where you've seen Colin getting a bollocking in the past when he went past Carlos and the Subaru days and things like that. Trev just said, we don't really see it in football. I can only really think of one incident over the last probably 5 years or maybe even a bit longer now. But Phil Brown at Hull basically dragging all his players back out onto the pitch to give them a public bollocking. And then he was sacked soon later. So it proves that perhaps it isn't the way to go. What did you make of what went on?
It's Hyundai's whole approach has been quite consistent, in fairness, hasn't it? This is how they've always sort of treated their drivers. It's a very public, do your job, or we'll move things around until we're happy with where we're going with it. And you know, from a manufacturer's point of view, they've got a responsibility to deliver results for the manufacturer. But at the same time, you know, I think Trevor said there, he can't think of any examples where doing this kind of thing has worked. And to be fair, I'm not sure I can think of many either. The only one you could maybe argue is Thierry, because he was demoted to the second team of GB a couple of years back, wasn't he? And he's come back strong. But whether that's down to, you know, the sort of harsh criticism he got from the team at the time, or whether that's something else is something you've got to be behind closed doors to try and work out. But you know, I think the driver's motivation is having the car underneath them to really go out and do the job, and when they know they've got that, they can do it. And that's something that Thierry's definitely done this year.
With regards to the incident with Chris, what did you make of that?
Sorry, which incident was that?
It was Chris and Yves Matton, where Chris basically was filmed discussing with Yves Matton when Citroën decided to pull the car out for Super Rally purposes. And it was a very public, when I say very public, as I say, it was filmed. There was a TV crew there.
Yeah.
And basically, yeah, Chris was quoted, you know, straight away, you know, basically they stuck a mic under his face straight after the spat, and you just don't want these things to happen for him.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's from a team's point of view, it made sense for Citroën probably not to run for the rest of the rally, didn't it? To kind of protect the car and not do any more damage or anything like that. And for Chris, he wants to complete as many competitive miles as he possibly can and be out there the whole time fighting for stage wins and doing the absolute best job he can. So for me, that was for me, that was a kind of a meeting of the, you know, what the driver wants and what the team wants, and quite often they're not the same thing, and that's definitely what happened in that case, I think. But it's going to be interesting to see how they move forward for next year, and whether that's sort of significant, or whether that's a sort of hint to what might happen next year, you know, if this kind of thing continues, or whether Citroën are going to be back with a, you know, a bit of a new approach next year. Now they know they've got a whole year to kind of fight for the championship, because, you know, that's been taken away from them this year, hasn't it, with the car not being up to scratch and some mistakes from the drivers.
Yeah. Trev, just want to go to Chris's teammate as well as we kind of go through it. Craig Breen, as stage ends go, he's just gold, isn't he?
He is, you know, he's always worn his heart in his sleeve, and what that guy's gone through, it's just amazing that he still does it, and he's got a totally different way of doing things, a bit like Alvin Evans was in the year with Tannock, when they were both in the same car together. He'll build a pace at a pace where he knows he's comfortable, and we've seen that right the way through. Remember, look at the championships he's won as he go on through and had that approach, very Burnsy-like, and he'll continue to do that. There's no doubt that car wasn't right this year, and he didn't push it because of that. He had plenty of fifth place finishes, but remember, he has a podium from Finland the year before, and he'd be fine, I've no doubt about it. And again, just the way of the emotion, especially in Wales, and you see that happen. It was unfortunate what happened in Australia, but look at the times he was setting for a guy who had never been there before. That was quite impressive. And Lefebvre, in fairness, he was setting good times as well, but again, back to more mistakes, more losses in concentration, whatever's distracting them, whatever's causing the issue, we just need to sort that out a little
bit. I'll come to you first, Jack, and I'll pose exactly the same question to Trev. We've just been discussing consistency, mistakes, this, that. It seems to be across the board, doesn't it? You know, I suppose Sebastian Ogier, you could almost put to one side, and every other driver. Now, what's this down to? Is it down to pressure, Jack? Is it down to the cars being quicker? What do you think it's down to? Because everyone seems to suffer with these moments.
I think this year it's been intensified because of the introduction of the 2017 cars, and you know, I think this probably plays a lot into, you know, talking about how Australia played out. I don't think any of the drivers didn't turn up because you can't afford to, and maybe that's the reason why we saw some mistakes. But you've got to be on it the whole time in these cars. You can't afford to be at 60-70%. You know, the way these cars are driven, there's so much concentration needed, and I think we're seeing this effect magnified this year because of what is needed to drive these cars quickly. And you know, you've got to be so clean and tidy with these cars. But I know it doesn't always look like that from the outside, but it's all about maintaining a rhythm and making the aero work and stuff. And these guys are, you know, they're pushing so hard and they're driving the fastest rally cars, you know, ever built at a really competitive level. And we've seen how close some of the rallies have been this year, you know, closer than the year before, even though the cars have got quicker. So I think what we're seeing is, you know, you often see this in different sports where you have a rules reset with cars. You get a sort of, you either get one manufacturer that comes out and delivers an absolute brilliant car and the rest of everybody else is chasing, or you get people sort of, they can't do so much within the rules, so they're quite even, and it creates really competitive events, and that's what we've seen this year. And I think that's what's putting the drivers under more pressure, is how competitive everything is and how difficult to drive these cars are.
Trev, same point to you. As I say, we can almost put Park, Sebastian, Ogier. We've had every team, every driver has suffered these minor moments, these minor offs, that, you know, just minor mistakes, which obviously are magnified. What should you put it down to?
I wouldn't park Sebastian Ogier this year. He's made more mistakes this year than he has done probably in the last two combined, or maybe even three combined. Look at all the issues he had right from Monte Carlo, where he parked it in the ditch, if you remember. But whether people think it's luck or not, it never is. I remember Colin McRae used to always give Tommy Mäkinen a hard time about how lucky he was. You see the in cars of Mäkinen, big skids, big slides, but managed to catch it. And it's just this reaction is quicker, thinking a little bit clearer. And we're only talking about split seconds here. And even Ogier, we referred to it the last time when I was on in GB when he did break the wheel, break the disc, but just his determination to get that car together again and then go out and not be distracted in the next stage and set an unbelievable time, almost miraculous, to keep himself in the rally and to win the championship in GB that he wanted to do. It is, for me, just brakes and concentration, as Jack said earlier. I'm totally convinced about it, either on the recce, whether they're not making the right pace notes, or on the rally when something distracts them. And until they sit down, it's a bit like punctures as well. Some drivers get more punctures than others. Until you sit down and actually work out, let's be really rational about what actually happened and analyse it. And I think there's not enough of that goes on. I think drivers have the mistakes and they just gather themselves up, dust themselves down, go off and do it. And I've seen more than one occasion where they're making the same mistakes over and over again. And you can't win a championship like that. Some drivers have turned the corner, in particular Aut Tänak, I think, this year in particular. He's had those couple of wins, and I think he's turned the corner. Unfortunately, he's gone to a car that isn't as sorted as a Ford, in my view. So he's going to have to build that up again and see what the car feels like. Elvin Evans is another one who I think has turned the corner. He'll have learnt from the year with Tänak in the works car. He certainly upped his pace in the WRC2 car, and we've seen this year his pace on certain rallies where he can go. So there are drivers who I think that will definitely put it up to Mr. Ogier. I think he'd be there again next year. I have no qualms that if he's going to retire, he'd have retired after GB. So I think this is more to that.
Okay, boys, just before we finish with Rally Australia, a couple of things have come about with regards to it. You know, Jackie mentioned before, obviously, it felt a little bit of a strange last round of WRC. The number of entrants, I'm just obviously looking now at the top 10, and I'm not going to give you a hard time, Jack, but obviously we were talking about how rallies, you know, competition and everything else. And obviously on this particular event, we've got the Australian Rally Championship boys who've now come into it. And by the way, congratulations to Nathan Quinn. Very emotionally talking about stage ends. Took on the factory Subaru team. And obviously, Harry Bates and the Toyota. Obviously, he's had issues trying to get that EP4 car sorted, but doing a great job there in the old Evo now. So congratulations to him. But do you see a place still in the championship for an event like Rally Australia, Jack?
It's a difficult one. I think things we've discussed already, you know, in my opinion, the time zones and the fact that it's the last round of the championship make it really difficult, because if we had gone to the last round of the championship in terms of, you know, competing for the most competitive WRC year in how many years, and it had gone down to Australia where the majority of the fan base are, you know, having to stay up into the middle of the night to try and keep up and follow it, for me that doesn't make it an ideal final round of the championship. I think it's a cracking event, and you know, the pictures and the drivers are complimentary of the stages in most parts, you know, and that part of it is great, but the fact that, you know, it is in a different time zone and it is the final round of the championship means it, you know, it could slot in a different place, or I think would be better suited to a different time of the year. But you know, it's always the debate of Australia, isn't it? Whether it should be Australia or New Zealand, or that's what everyone always brings it back down to. And for me, you know, or any other real rally fan, I think you want to see an event in New Zealand over Australia. So it's, you know, it's a really difficult one.
Trev, what are your thoughts?
Interesting. I haven't been to Rally Australia when it's been on the East Coast, but I've seen a couple of articles. I think David Evans wrote one the other day about the lack of people that were there and trying to get people out onto the rallies. But is it about actual spectators on the ground, or is it about showcasing your country, or in this case, your state, as New South Wales Tourism backed it a lot? And then there's the current, it's the usual arguments, Tony. You know, we could go over it again and again, but I think it's always nice to see Rally GB as the last rally, but that's just purely a selfish idea from my point.
No, I couldn't agree more. There was a little part of me, and I'm just going back to what Jack said, again, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole. There was a little part of me that if it would have been the last round, and it would have been kind of one of those nice things where, you know, you are up through the night to see what's going on, and kind of maybe the rationale, maybe it might have added to it for Europe as opposed to hindering it. But I take on board your point, Jack. I do take on board your point. Boys, a couple of other bits and pieces, just a little bit. Cali Rovanperä, of course, only WRC2 runner, it has to be said, but he did score points, youngest ever point scorer in WRC. Jack, is this a springboard for something?
Well, he was on his own, so it's difficult, isn't it? To be fair, he was probably the same amount off the 2017 cars as most of the sort of front-running guys have been on most rallies. So, although you've not got a direct benchmark, he was definitely in the ballpark of sort of top five to top 10 WRC2 pace, which he struggled with a little bit on GB. So, yeah, probably is a positive for him moving forward. But, yeah, no idea what he's going to be doing next year, because every time I seem to pick up MN, there seems to be a different story involved with Robin Perra. And, I wouldn't be surprised if he's driving anything next year.
I'll come back to this in a second. Trev, I just wanted to just get your thoughts on Cali Robin Perra.
Yeah, superstar in the making. It's the first of many points, no doubt about it whatsoever. He's a lot of learning to do along the way, but he's been driving rally cars fast since the age of 8. So the muscle memory and everything that goes with that, that whole side of things isn't an issue at all. So yeah, it's first of many, Tony.
There you go. Now, Jack, he's just going back to what you were saying with regards to what he could be doing next year. I've seen something today. We record this section of the podcast today being Thursday, that Pirelli are now coming back to WRC. They're going to be the tyre supplier to JWRC and also to WRC2 runners. I wonder if that kind of ties in with Cali Robin Perra's long-standing relationship with the Italian tyre manufacturer.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the story in MN says as much this week that, Cali's being lined up for some sort of pseudo work Skoda WRC2 bid next year. So whether he ends up in a Skoda or a Ford, we're not entirely sure. Whether it'll be something else by the time we get to Monte Carlo, I've got no idea. He's clearly got, he's got Timo Jokic behind him, so he'll be getting the best deal for him as possible. And there was talk, he was in the Hyundai Young Driver shootout, wasn't he? And there was talk about him doing BRC next year and all these kind of things. So I think the next few months will kind of clear this up. But yeah, to see Pirelli back and getting involved in WRC at a time when DMAC are kind of pulling out, and although DMAC are pulling out, WRC and Pirelli aren't going into that, it's nice to see a time manufacturer coming in and giving a different option in the WRC2, and then obviously JWRC will be running Pirellis as well, so they're increasing their presence again, which will be nice to see. And yeah, that good to see them back.
Absolutely. Boys, we're at that point of the programme, believe it or not. We're headlong, we're nearly half an hour in, so we are getting to any other business. Trev, yours was a bit of a letdown last time you were on. I'll level with you.
Fair enough.
I just thought I'd put it out there. Yours has always been really, really kind of quite interesting and quite deep and meaningful. Yours was just tipping, basically just saying that Elvin Evans is going to be WRC champion 2018. I think that's how you left it.
Well, I think that's the truth,
okay.
Isn't it?
Oh, no, good on you. Good on you. Right, well, I'm going to... Jack, have you got an awesome any other business for us this week? I'll take that as a no.
It's probably not awesome. It's a bit of a rant.
That's not like you, Jack Bengen.
Oh, you've gone left field here. I thought you were going to go Rally Du Far.
Ah, well, you see, that was going to be mine. So...
That was yours, okay.
I'll be honest with you, right? It was on the thin line of any other business, or whether it was actually going to be part of the main thing. So, Rally Du Var, I know. Obviously, I've seen some great pictures. Oshin Price is over there because supporting Sarah Williams is out there doing the Clio Cup that's going on the One Make series over there. But I've just seen this awesome picture of Sebastian Loeb's 306, which just made me go giddy. And that was going to be the reference I was going to make to Rally Du Var, so there you go. Jack, was that, have I just stole your thunder a little bit?
Nope.
No, that's all right. That's safe. Okay. Would you like to do your any other business?
I can do. Yeah. Very, very quickly. We talked a bit about the Billy Coleman last week. Just to add to that, the three finalists have been chosen. So Presto Motorsport News Junior British Rally Champion, there we go, got it in again, Callum Devine is involved, Johnny Trainer, who's a front running junior in Honda Civic, and Kevin Eves, who is the Irish Tarmac Historic Modified Champion with the blue Corolla that I was talking about last week. Those are the three finalists, and that'll be decided on December the 5th, I think. So just to clear that up for anyone who's interested in seeing who wins the Billy Coleman Award, obviously Keith Cronin, Craig Breen winners before, so be interesting to see who wins that and what they do with it. And the other one was inspired by friend of the show, Jamie Edwards. Joe, I'm going to go with this now, Tony.
I'm trying to think what I've spoke to Jamie. Well, Jamie hasn't been on the program, but I have spoke to Jamie.
Mine's
yeah.
No, congrats to Jamie, by the way, because he won an award at the Scottish Rally Championship Awards the other week, which was nice. But I'm kind of stealing his thunder, really. So thanks to Jamie for tweeting about this extensively and kind of picking up on this. But the Welsh Sports Personality of the Year Award, there's one very significant omission from this list, and that is Elvin Evans, who has not been submitted into the finalists of the Welsh Sports Personality of the Year Award by the BBC, which I think is, working for a publication, it's always, you never want to criticise other publications because, you make mistakes yourself, and it's very easy to campaign about other publications being rubbish when in actual fact you do make mistakes yourself, and I'm always the first one to admit when I've made some mistakes. But it's very disappointing to see that, someone like the BBC have omitted this, that Elvin Evans has become the first Welsh driver to win his home round of a World Rally Championship event, and he's been omitted from the Sports Personality of the Year Award, which is staggering in my opinion. I honestly couldn't believe it when I read that, and Jamie's put something on some social media this week to say that he's not very happy about it. I think a few people should make a bit of noise about that, because it's a real shame, and we always talk about how it's difficult in rallying when you've not got that top end of rallying being banded around the back pages anymore, which is probably an unreasonable goal these days. But the fact that it's not talked about is kind of magnified, isn't it? And the fact that Elvin's not made the Sports Personality was really disappointing.
Couldn't have put it better myself. I couldn't have put it better myself. Well done, you, Trev.
Just to go back to Rally du Var, there's a couple of course cars running that probably need to talk about as well.
They get mentioned. Well, I'll be honest with you. This is the beauty of recording a podcast as well, that later on in the podcast, the guys, Trev and Jack, don't know what I've done, what's coming up later in the podcast. Later in the podcast, we've got Chris Mellors from MEN, who's talking about the Iris R5, and we do talk about some of the other R5s. So, Trev, I'm not going to steal your thunder, but please tell our listeners what the car's aero is going to be on Rally du Var.
Well, there's two. There's an Orica R4 car, which is Ryan's favourite, of course. He can't wait to get that. He wants that loads of brilliantly. And the Citroen D5.
Yeah, I'll be honest. The R4, it's not just not good. It's just not good. Let's not upset Ryan.
There's news.
The X3 R5.
Yeah. Okay. Go on, Jack Bennion.
David Evans went out to the test app a couple of weeks ago for the R4, and he's done a feature for next week's MN. So make sure you pick up next week MN to have a little read about that. I'm sure we'll talk about it a bit more on Absolute Rally when Ryan's back next week.
Well, he won't be back next week, mate.
We should probably mention Ryan and what he's doing as well.
Again, this is the other thing. Ryan's at the end of the podcast. He just finished doing the shakedown of the car. So we talk about that, and we are going to record a little piece kind of mid-event with him as well. It's at the end of the day, folks, we have presenters that do stuff. That's the end. And I suppose Ryan's our Stig. And ironically, his teammate is Stig, the real Stig.
I was just going to say, he'll be busy getting hard enough Stig by now.
Jack, I tell you what, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. After your comments with regards to competition and events and the amount of time in between winners and losers, I noticed you stayed out of some of the Twitter comments, by the way.
Yeah. I was thinking about an extensive reply to a lot of those Twitter comments in Absolute Rally this week, guarded against it, and everyone can have their own opinions about everything, so we'll leave it at that.
Fair play. Right.
I did to be fair, some of the tweets that came in, I did agree with some of the stuff that people were saying, and it's always nice to get that reaction to different stories and hear different people's opinions, because you should never assume that you know everything yourself, and you should always take everyone's opinion on board and use it to sort of make your thoughts a bit more sort of deep.
I couldn't agree more. Anyway, folks, just before I go, my any other business, just very, very quickly, the genius that is M Sport that managed to make a water jet on Tanak's car when he changed into third gear on a road section, I think that deserved an award within itself. And also, potentially, he was quite emotional when he was saying goodbye to his Volvo for the last time. The Volvos were meant to be retired as recce cars last year. I know that for a fact. I'm amazed that we've seen some of them this year. I just wonder whether having Sebastian Ogier having his Focus RS this year, whether they're going to have Focused RSs across the board next year. But still, there you go. I'm guessing we'll find out. But if that was the last event for the Volvos, I salute you.
because you've been outstanding vehicles and more than stood up to the job. So there you go. Boys, that's it for this section. Jack, same time, same place next week.
Yep.
Trevor Agnew, same time, same place next week for you.
Yeah, let's get you back.
Why not? Why not? Ryan's on his sabbatical.
Well, we could spend the next week discussing contracts, and you know the tarmac specialist can drop out if you want to bring Trev in to do the gravel around next week. That's fine.
That's negotiation. I'm his agent. Remember, Tony branded me as Ryan's agent, so I have to get the.
I'm sure we'll sort it out, folks. Anyway, we'll all be back next week. Coming up, by the way, we've got Chris Mellors, as I've just mentioned, coming up. He's talking about the new Proton R5. We've also got David Higgins, who I caught up with at Sweet Lamb last week, talking about the season that he had on the American Rally Association Championship. What's coming up, maybe for the coming year, and also then we finish with Ryan Champion, who just finished doing the shakedown for his Tuttle Port. So, folks, sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast, and we'll be back same time, same place, your little podcast hold next week.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop, and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. And we've talked quite a bit recently about the success of M Sport and what's happened up at Dovenby and everything else, which has been fantastic. Let's be honest, it's been a great story. But it got me thinking about small teams in the World Rally Championship. And then I realised there was a team in the World Rally Championship and has been really successful in various championships all over the world that's possibly got less people in it than what Dovenby's got in their catering department, which is Mellors Elliott Motorsport over in Bakewell. And we're very, very privileged now to have Chris Mellors join us from the team. Chris, welcome to Absolute Rally.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're good. As I say, we've been talking quite a lot about small teams in the World Rally Championship over the last few episodes, and as I say, it got me thinking about you guys anyway, and we've been meaning to get you on, but of course you've got this exciting new project.
Yeah, there aren't many teams that are smaller than ours that do sort of everything, all the engineering, design, and running of the cars. But we enjoy what we do, and we're just working on this new Proton Iris R5, and it's pretty exciting.
The process, obviously, I suppose, you know, a lot of people take stuff for granted that what goes on behind the scenes, you know, you're hands-on to the extent where I've called into your place, you're in overalls and everything else. We're going through the homologation process at the moment, which is, you know, a term that's used quite a lot, kind of quite freely in motorsport. Not everybody kind of understands that you're on the cusp of actually just getting this homologated now, aren't you?
That's right. Yeah, we had had an inspection by the FIA last week. We're looking to go for homologation in March. But yeah, it's basically from when you decide to go ahead to getting homologation, sort of almost a minimum of 9 months, and can go on quite a bit longer. There are many, many facets to it, and you've got to choose an engine you're going to use, which has been come from one of the cars in the range, homologate that. You then need to choose which car you're going to use, which we've chosen the Iris, and we need to homologate that into Group A, which is basically the just the standard car. And then you've got to do the roll cage homologation, and then you've got to do the R5 homologation, and encompassed in all that is obviously all not just the components and the drawings and everything else, the weight of every component, but now of course also the cost. So you've got to do a full breakdown of what all the parts cost as well, and that's including the homologation papers.
And that's eye watering. Let's not think too much about that.
Well, the regulations that even we after doing it for many, many years are still perplexed sometimes, and there's many emails go back and forwards to the FIA trying to just sometimes interpret a rule, sometimes you really can't understand what it is, and sometimes, you know, you do the completely the wrong part because the explanation is not quite as you would expect. But we get there, and the engine's done. The Group A car is now all done, and the inspection did also look at the R5 car too. The idea is that, you know, you get to the homologation date and there are no surprises. It used to be that some team of people came on the day you wanted to, before you wanted to homologate it, and say, oh, you can't do that. Now it's much more proactive, and you work with the FIA, you go along and they'll say, well, we don't like that, can you move this? That's not within the regulation. So hopefully, fingers crossed, when you get to your given homologation date that you want to choose, and it's every 3 months, everything should have all the boxes ticked. And it's a bit more of a formality.
So, is this the most stressful point now until March, or is the most stressful point before the first time they come in and see you?
Oh, it's just stress from start to finish. there is no high and low points. It's just sleepless nights from when you start. No, the idea is that you know you don't get stressed. That's the whole point. We try and interpret the regulations as close as we possibly can. We then either send a CAD model or do some drawings or take some pictures or make a prototype, send it off and say, you know, this is what we're thinking, what do you think? And they'll say yes or no, or, you know, maybe it's a bit long or something like that. But the regulations are, in order to comply with the regulations, in order to get under the price, in order to make it fit the car, in order for it to last, there's so many things going on at once that a lot of people just don't realise, you know. And I think some people tend to think it's a bit like just sort of getting a logbook on a normal club car, and it's not. It's very involved.
Because again, you know, we had the Saturday Neo Super 2 car, which was very successful for you, but there is no carryover here at all, is there? There's nothing. There's not a common component at all.
No, not really. we tried to keep it in the same genetics. The Saturday was a good little car. It was the first car we designed in total. And that was quite eye-watering at times, because one or two of the aspects we went to tried and tested companies who were supposedly experts and paid a lot of money for some components, and it was only when we sort of got to the testing stage or actually doing events that we realised that they were not very good or failed or this, that and the other. So of course, when you're tied in with homologation, it's very difficult to change. You have to play jokers and things. So we got there in the end, and the car was very, very competitive. But this one, we've learnt an awful lot, and to be honest, it does seem, and I'm touching wood now, but it does seem to be sort of pretty good out of the box. We've done about just short of 1,000 kilometres now testing, with no real problems, and it appears to be, you know, very competitive, very fast.
Well, obviously we know one of the test drivers because he's your son, but also Ollie, of course, who did British Rally Championship in one of the old Saturday Nils last year and went very, very well indeed. But not only has Ollie been doing some of the testing work, you've also had somebody, a former world champion, doing some for you as well.
Yeah, Marcus Grönholm came across and did a day with us, which was super. There's sort of various stages you go through when you're testing. You know, one is just basically do the wheels go around. B, and then you start to looking at systems, making sure they're all doing what they should, you know, the braking, the cooling or whatever. And then you start doing some running, which, you know, you're hoping that to find out if anything breaks or doesn't. And then you start getting to the sort of performance stage. You never stop changing things. Literally, they change by the week, but hopefully no major components. Relocation of stuff. The lads come to put a gearbox in or something and say, well, you know, if we move that bracket 10 mil that way, I could get a bolt to get my spanners in there and this sort of thing. So it gradually evolves. But, Ollie had done most of the testing up to that point, and really done a pretty good job. And I was talking with George Donaldson, a good pal who's doing some work with us, and he said, I'm sure Marcus would love to come over and have a go. So we popped over to Helsinki to have a long chat with him, and yeah, he's obviously still highly involved with VW, with their cars and Skoda, but he's not solely contracted to them. So he said, "Yeah, I'll come over and at least give you an idea of what I think, where we are, and with having first up to date and experience of the Skoda and what have you, it was a pretty good back to back to get some ideas, and it went very well."
Is there any hopes to have Marcus in again, or any other drivers? How does it work when you get to this point? Are you looking for drivers that have drove other R5 cars, or is it just, you know, good experienced guys, or what? How does it work?
Well, we have sort of 50 phone calls a week of everyone and the grandmother wanting to test it and help and this, that, and the other, which is nice. Yes, sometimes you just need to really just spend, you know, days in the forest and just going round and round and round. And I say not necessarily looking at performance testing. You know, Ollie might go out, or when Marcus is in the car, just goes out and a load of laps, and then we look at the data and then go and do the same thing again and with a different setting. And you're not necessarily looking for, you know, the next Sebastian Loeb. But no, it was good from having Marcus in, because we thought the car was pretty good, and he came and was absolutely bowled over by it. We had a fabulous day. A couple of small things he suggested we change, which was something and nothing, weight of the handbrake, and the weight of the steering. Both of those we've changed now. But apart from that, he was very surprised by the engine and the chassis. It's a very short car. We've tried to spec it with all the best bits you can buy, which will be a challenge to keep it within the price limit, but I think we can do it. But we've got the 4B11 engine, which is the same as the basically the Evo 10 and the Hyundai i20 Euro engine. Extract transmission, Cosworth electronics, Raiga dampers, Brembo brakes, etc. You know, so yeah, it's a Proton on the outside and sort of quite a bit of kit on the inside.
Is it you've took on this challenge before? Of course, when you did the Super 2 car, you went and took on the big boys again, and obviously the big boys other than Volkswagen are all out. You know, you've got the C3 R5 coming out this weekend, running as course car. Is that the motivation to try and beat the big boys?
I don't know. I think I'm just probably a bit mad, really, because I just enjoy engineering and the challenge of, you know, getting a bare body shell and turning it into something that you stand at the end of a stage and see the stage times and think, yeah, that works. We've got a great relationship with Proton. It goes back 17 years. The company has gone through some fairly major changes, and at the moment it's quite an exciting time because they've joined forces with Geely, which is Volvo and London Taxi, etc. You know, I really think the company's going to go somewhere. So we're in at the right time with that. And say, cracking little car, it's tiny, it's got a wheel at each corner. And, you know, we felt that we could probably make something that was very competitive, and we seem to have done. Yeah, there's many other R5 cars there, and to be honest, more the better. I think the difference will be with our car is we're probably the only manufacturer that's going to build right and left hand drive cars for R5. Which is quite interesting for quite a few countries. But obviously, being based in Asia, many of the countries down there are right-hand drive. And we've got a lot of interest from Ireland because, you know, a lot of the Irish guys like right-hand drive cars.
Fantastic. So Christmas is coming up. Does Christmas still get celebrated in the Miller's household when you've got final homologation happening in March?
Yeah, well, I presume we're probably working through Christmas as usual. It's great. It's interesting times, and we're quite excited by it. And let's see what the new year brings.
Fantastic. Chris, thanks so much for joining us, mate. And again, we wish you all the best of luck with it. And of course, we'll have a chat in the new year, and hopefully you'll be able to announce a programme and what's going on then.
Absolutely. Thanks for ringing.
You're listening to Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine, your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Here we are at Sweet Lamb. As I say, normally I would have been here with Ryan Champion, not Ryan this week, but... Eight times American Rally Champion, various other things. Let's not get bogged down with semantics. David Higgins, welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's good to be face-to-face for a change.
Yeah, that's good. It's obviously here at Sweet Lamb helping young Jack Leese. He's a young driver that's come up from kart racing. I've been working with him for 2 or 3 years now. We had some like junior cars and bits and pieces, and just stepping up to doing, he's doing his first gravel rally in Grisdale stages in 3rd December. So just getting him back into the forest and dialed in and ready for the big learning curve from going from racetracks to single venue to then having to listen to co-drivers and notes and things. So it's a big job we've got, but he's planning on doing BTRDA next year as a good sort of first year in the woods. So it's good fun, and you know, part of what I do when I'm not driving.
I was surprised to see you in Wales these days. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I've actually been home for quite a while because our rally finished in August, and didn't do any rally cross this year. So I've been home for a while, annoying the wife as you do when you're home for longer than normal. But the kids are keeping me busy with their racing, and obviously I'm busy with Jack and a few other people that I still enjoy doing the one-to-one training with.
So this year you have a teammate who pipped you. That must have been an interesting experience for you, having been the dominant force in American rally for such a long time.
Yeah, it's annoying to obviously not have the title number after it, but when you look at the facts, we won same amount of rallies, same amount of seconds. I won almost double the amount of stages to what Travis won. But the way the rules worked and the way they made that point system for if you have a bad stage at any point, like we had on two super specials, basically an SDPR rally where we were like 30th because of a turbo pipe, still won the rally, but those points of the system that they use on the thing robbed us basically. But you know, Travis and Robbie did a good job, and Greg, obviously Greg the super sub, can't forget him. So there were some weird things happened this year, and to be honest, and if I was sat here not being the champion because somebody was faster than me and did a better job, then I'd be disappointed. But the reality is that we lost it on a few weird circumstances, and move on and just go and get it back. Like I tell Travis, it's only temporary, so enjoy it while it lasts.
So what's next then? What's the crack?
Just negotiating contracts now, looking to do another contract with Subaru. Wasn't sure up until a few weeks ago whether I'd maybe do more rally or rally cross. It was the way I felt after the rally in this year, I was quite keen to leave it.
Joey would have been devastated.
Yeah, and then to be honest, there was an element where the longer you don't do a rally, the more I crave to be in a rally cross car, but nowhere near as much as I do to be in a rally car. So I think it's more likely I'll be back in the woods doing the rally, and we're just doing some final details now. But we're back across the pond again doing that, and obviously with my kids racing as well, possibly going to step up, and maybe Matthew, even though he's only done 1 year of racing, he's done very well. My daughter's done really well, but I think Matthew might move into doing some Super One British Championship events next year. So it's busy with that as well, but at the same time, it's just, you know, motorsport's a great grounding for kids in a way that, yes, there's the downside of it, which is obviously the money and the everything else, but you know, kids are used to being with grown-ups, are used to dealing with different people.
And I'm going through that. I've got a 3.5-week-old at the moment, so we're just going through that at the moment.
It's a great thing, and you know, like I was lucky that we were brought up in around the motorsport, so it's nice that the kids are wanting to do the same thing. My daughter in her last year of normal school now, and she wants to go into motorsport and looking at possible engineering and God knows what else. So
Could have your daughter engineering your
I
car.
Know, well, that's quite a scary thought, but you know, these things are...
don't upset it.
These things are possible, yeah. So.
No groundings from here on in.
No. And the trouble is they both do very well at school, which is great, and they obviously don't get that from my side of the family, but I think it's the competitive side. That if they're going to do something, they want to do it well, and that's what you learn from motorsport, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Is there any hankerings to do anything other than the start? It must be such a boring question, but it's got to be such well-trodden ground. Is there anything possibility to see you in Europe?
I'd love to, but the problem is that, well, when I say a problem, I'm in a very, very fortunate position that I'm employed to drive by a manufacturer, and there's not many
around.
People that can say that. So the fact that the manufacturer I'm with doesn't have a car that suits doing anything much more outside of America is obviously the only negative. You know, when Rally GB, like I came out of the gym on one morning just before GB and watched the recce cars go by, and I'm like, oh God, I'd love to be doing this again. Yeah. But I, at the same time, I don't want to do it in a Group N car. I want to do it like an R5 car, yeah, or a things. But the clashes of manufacturers don't fit. So I wouldn't say I wouldn't do anything, because I'd love to do it. But at the same time, I'm in a really, really good position with Subaru.
Do you think the opening up now, the way they've kind of dropped this homologation thing, we could perhaps see the beast come across now?
I think there's more of a possibility now that thing started to happen. But a lot depends on, we don't even really know what the regulations are for next year in America of what the cars are. And obviously the reason why we couldn't bring our car originally was because it's classed as space frame, even though it's not, but the front is cut away. So they'd have to modify that heavily to do it. But the more, like I keep telling my boss, the more cars he builds and the more cars that we end up doing as the years go on, the more cars there is in the stores that we could modify one to come over and play with. So I would love to see what my car would do against, not necessarily the new cars now, I think they are too good, but I think going back a year to the old spec cars, I think my car on some say would give them a real good run for the money. And I think there's a lot of Subaru fans out there that would love to see it. But I do have an inkling that maybe something I never ever thought would ever happen, but now some of the old legacies and I have a real thing that I would love to do.
Ryan and I were talking about
RAC rally.
Yeah, Ryan, I was saying to Ryan, surely this is your time now.
Yeah.
And he said, 38mm restrictor, proper weapon. He said, but the thing is, it's like running a wheel car on a 4-day event. So
So that's something that I am on the pipeline, would look into kind of have a go at doing that. But it's scary to think that the cars that were the ultimate car when I first started rallying could be a car that you could now
use
in the store. That makes you feel really old. So we might have to name it something different. So I don't think, I remember thinking, oh, I'd love to rally one. I'd love to rally one then. So who knows? But that could be something, that could be a possibility. And obviously Ken Block now getting his old Cosworth, then maybe we could pull out an old car and go and do some head-to-heads in America and bring back some classic rallying.
Cool. All right, well, listen, David, thanks so much for joining us. And good job today, by the looks of things. He seems to be going well. So,
it's always a good sign when the car drives off the trailer and drives back onto it again. That's a sign of a good day in your training.
I've just had that relief as well. Yeah. David Higgins, thanks for joining us again on Absolute Rally.
Thank you.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Click motorsportauctions.com. Now, one of the world's leading motorsport online classified adverts and auction sites. It's easy to use, providing listing platforms that enable you to sell race and rally cars, surplus parts, transporters, clothing, workshop and pit equipment. We specialise in cataloguing, listing and selling large quantities of motorsport-related surplus and obsolete stock. Click motorsportauctions.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And you know, it's been a bit odd. We haven't had Ryan at the top of the programme, but we've got him at the end of the programme. Time differences, testing schedules and just generally Wi-Fi in Africa have played a part in this. So, Ryan Champion, hello.
Hello, good to be here eventually.
I know. It was nice to have you here eventually. You've been a busy old boy. You haven't even started the rally yet.
No, it's been a busy few days. It always is leading up to the Safari Rally. I mean, it's it's an 8-day epic marathon, so there's a lot of preparation goes in. So just been trying to get organised. Did a little bit of testing yesterday. And I've actually practiced changing a fan belt and a distributor on a 911 today. So there's probably some people out there that don't know what a fan belt and a distributor is, but these old cars have them, and I now know how to change them.
Do you feel like a Time Lord? Do you feel like you've gone back in time and basically just rediscovered history in itself?
Well, as anybody who knows me well knows, my mechanical knowledge isn't the best, so they'll probably be quite impressed I can even do that in the first place. But
no, I'm impressed, mate. I'm impressed. Fair play. You.
I have to say, the car, the 911s we use here, I mean, yes, they're in theory period specification, but when you drive them, they're 300 horsepower, they're a real challenge to drive. So, and we've got good dampers, we've got modern dampers, so you never actually really, you never really think you're driving an old car. You just, you pretty much drive it as you would a modern car, albeit it's got to last for 8 days.
So we record this on Tuesday. You did your Tuttles did their own shakedown, as it were, yesterday. I don't think it was the official shakedown, was it?
No, we had the official shakedown is in a place called Vipingo Ridge, which is actually where the Tuttle team are based pre-rally. But the official shakedown stage, we actually used it 2 years ago, and it's quite short, it's quite rutted, it's very narrow, whereas we actually used a 16K loop just nearby there, which was fast and flowing, so it was good preparation. We did our test yesterday, and then Stig Blomqvist, Stig flew in overnight, and Stig was testing today.
How are the, we'll take for granted, I guess, when we do shakedown and we do testing and stuff like that. How does that kind of have the knock-on effect with the locals? The locals like to get involved? Are you always mindful that there could be a local just going about the business?
The traffic is obviously an issue on the East African Safari Rally. You can't close the roads for the 100-plus mile stages that we do. And when we do the shakedown, we do tend to be closer to town, but you just have to take that into account. But the locals love it. Everywhere we go on the route, the locals just stand and cheer you on, and we were at a local school, and all the school children came out and wanted the picture taken around the car, and they don't see rally cars very often, and the Safari Rally still holds a lot of memories for people in Kenya, and also it is sort of very, very well known still. So people like to see it when it's in their area.
Absolutely. You've recorded your first video from East African Safari. We put it out on a retweet yesterday. That's something we're going to try and keep doing.
Yeah, well, I'm going to try and do it each day. I'll do a report at the end of every day about our trials and tribulations. I'd like to say it'll be a trouble-free rally, but the nature of this event, it never is. There's nothing ever straightforward about it. We're already hearing stories of a big mud hole in the first competitive section, which is on Thursday. I'll do a report at the end of each day and let everybody know how we're getting on.
I was just about to say, the other thing, of course, is how do people stay up to date with kind of watching the stage times? That must be that must be epic as well, because thinking about the length of stages, is there an official kind of timing or if you've got to go onto the website or whatever?
Yeah, I think, and it's something I haven't really followed up yet, but I think this year there is going to be live tracking on the through the website, through the East African Safari Rally website. So we've all got transponders on the cars this year, and it's a system supplied by a Portuguese company, apparently a well tried and tested system. There should be live tracking there, and it allows two-way communication with the rally organisers as well. So that's all. It's all pretty well organised. So that should keep everybody up to date. Results obviously will be issued at the end of each day, but sometimes results do take a bit of getting hold of. But hopefully they'll be on the website as well.
Happy days. Well, as I say, we record this on Tuesday. Officially, you start Thursday, is it?
Yeah, so like you said, there is the official shakedown, but we're done, really. We don't have to do the shakedown. So, the car's sort of almost finished its reprep today and it's ready to go. So we'll go up to the shakedown and we will at least attend it, but not run the car. And then we start at 6 o'clock on Thursday morning. And so an early start, as most days tend to be on safari, 270 kilometres of competitive mileage on the first day. So it definitely starts with a bang.
Plenty of time to bed yourself in. No short sharp shock here.
No. I mean, and I think the second day is something like 250 kilometres as well. So the first couple of days straight away are very tough. And it's, you know, you've just got to try and get through this rally without any big mistakes, without any big problems if you can. But that's easier said than done. An interesting comment from Stig Blomqvist was that to do well on this rally, you have to complete the rally without getting out of the car on stage.
Yeah,
a bit of an unusual quote, but what he was getting at was, you know, if you don't go off the road, you don't get stuck, you don't have to get out and push, you don't have a puncture, you'll have a really good result. So it's easier said than done, actually, staying in the car for the full rally.
Yeah. Now, we'll regurgitate your videos, which you've already done with the first video. But just the big question on everybody's lips, we know you've done this rally before. Effectively, you co-drove, I think, pretty much on the first part of the rally last time you did it. What's the plan of action this time around?
Well, yeah, we shared the driving last year, but this year I'm sort of driving from the start, so that's the plan, and we'll see how we go from there. But yeah, the plan is that I'll be doing the driving. So you know, it's, as I've already said, it's a tough rally, but at the same time you can't take it too easy, because you've got the likes of Stig Blomqvist, you've got the likes of Ian Duncan, who obviously won it in period with TTE during the might of TTE. You've got some very fast local drivers as well, and the pace is actually quite fast, so you've got to go reasonably well from the start, but obviously you have to look after the car and make sure you don't make any silly mistakes. So it's a bit of a balancing act.
There you go. Well, this is possibly the closest we've ever spoke as you as of a kind of guest on this programme, really. I'll be honest with you, I've got to kind of break character now, because I feel like we've kind of had you as a guest, which feels weird. So need to take the mick out of you. I need to do something before you go. I can't just let you slide off into the sunset of Nairobi or whatever it is and get away with it. So pull your finger out and can you go and win the safari for us?
Well, we'll take it one day at a time, but you know, we'll give it a shot anyway.
Don't give me cliches, Ryan Champion. Come on.
if I honestly think this is one rally. If you set out with a result in mind, I think it'll just bite you. So we'll worry about the results on day 7 or something like that. So,
I think it'll be interesting to get Jack Bengen to go through the results of stakes times. Bearing in mind some of the comments he made last week, which have been picked up on by one or two people.
Yeah, I did see that.
Bless his little cotton socks. Bless his little cotton socks. So there you go. Listen, mate, of course, the obvious thing is stay safe over there and enjoy. And obviously, we'll stay in contact and where we can get you. We start on Thursday and we finish the following Thursday or Friday, is it?
Following Friday, yeah. So we start in Mombasa on Thursday, and we go a little bit further north, make our way over towards Kilimanjaro and Amboseli, the Amboseli National Park. So we're the first overnight halt there, to the titles, six stages. We the border into Tanzania, and we're sort of a few days south of Mombasa, and like I says, some of which is in here as well. So it's this year. Some of you.
Timing is everything at this moment, because we are now starting to lose your Ryan Champion. You are now starting to cut out. So it is possibly the best time to leave you now. So stay safe, Ryan Champion. Folks, thank you so much for the download. Of course, we will try and have Ryan back mid-safari next week. We do appreciate the download. Keep telling your friends. Keep spreading the word. We'll be back same time, same place, in a little podcast hole next week.